And my next guest is a bar consultant, author, and host of Bar Rescue. You can see him every Sunday at 9, 8 Central on Bar Rescue on Spike TV. John Taffer, welcome to Dirty Pop.
Great to be here, Lance.
I love seeing you in front of me because we love your show. Bar Rescue
Thank you,
is so much fun. Let's talk about season 4 of Bar Rescue returns this Sunday.
It does.
On Spike TV. What are some things we're going to be seeing this season on Bar Rescue?
Well, you know, when I started the show, I never realized that there was a depth of failure to this level, to tell you the truth, these people could survive this way.
Uh-huh.
Now that we're in our fourth season, over 2,000 bars have tried to be rescued.
Oh, really?
So out of a pool of bars that big, the disasters that we have found, Lance, are truly remarkable. I mean, it's amazing that these people come in out of the rain, to be honest with you, in some cases.
Yeah.
But it's my most challenging season ever.
I bet. Now, with these bars that you rescue, how many of these actually take your advice and they stick with it and have a successful bar? And how many of those are just like they go bankrupt after 2 years?
You know, that's a great question. There's an independent website that tracks it. We have nothing to do with it. And they have us tracking at about 75 to 80% success factor.
Oh, that's way more
than
I'm
really proud
of
that number. Yep. Yeah. I'm really proud of that number.
Because I know, you know, I watch all of Chef Ramsay's stuff and, you know, he has the restaurant, you know, Rescue. Yep. And I think maybe 10% of the ones he helps ever, you know, survive. So that is a huge number.
But there's a real difference. You know, I remodel the whole place.
Yeah.
You know, rebrand it, new menus, new logos, new everything. So, you know, I really set them up with a whole fresh beginning. So they get almost a honeymoon.
Yeah.
You know how bars get that honeymoon when they open.
You better believe it. Now, you've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly of how people run and manage their bars and restaurants. What's the worst thing that you have seen in doing this show?
Well, you know, I think that the number one responsibility we all have to each other is to keep each other safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bars and alcohol is a drug.
Yes, yes, yes.
And, you know, if we're not responsible, I can get you sick. I can get you in a car accident. Right. So that infuriates me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, treating people with dignity infuriates me. But that's down to keeping a place clean, keeping it sanitary, making sure the floors aren't slippery.
Because we just assume that we're being served, you know, stuff that's not going to poison us.
No, and you know, you watch Bar Rescue, it's amazing the fruit flies and the bottles and the slime and the soda guns. And it almost makes you not want to go to a bar sometimes.
Yeah. What is your favorite bar you've ever been to?
Ooh, you know, there's a bar here in town in Beverly Hills in a Montage Hotel called 10 Pound.
10 Pound, like I haven't been there.
And it's 10 Pound in English pound, so it's an L10.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the greatest scotch bar in America.
Ooh.
And they do table-side mixology. They pull the card up next to your table, and they use all fresh ingredients, and it's great.
Yeah. What's your drink of choice?
I'm a Godfather guy, which is scotch with a couple of drops of amaretto.
Oh, a little amaretto in your scotch. I've never had that before.
Ooh, you'd like it. It's great.
Yeah, that does sound amazing.
Yeah, smooth.
Never heard of the Godfather.
Yeah, if you're going to drink, you got to drink smooth.
And after you drink it, you have to kill someone.
Or at least put a hit out on them, right? Now, tell us about the episode where a raccoon runs across the bar.
Okay, so we
by the way, I love this one, John. Like, this one, it's one of those things where I'm like, is this really happening?
Oh, it's, you know, you can't script this stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, I look in your eyes when I say this, Lance. There's not one word of Bar Rescue scripted ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, we go into this bar. We don't know about the raccoon, but there's a colony of them up above the drop ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And when raccoons defecate, gravity takes effect,
right,
and it drops downward.
How big is their poo? Is it like hamster? Or is it like
no?
Dog
no, it's about an inch and a half, an inch across.
Yeah.
You know, and it's got
Ruth,
a little bigger than a rabbit.
What's up?
Can you show us what an inch is?
I don't think he measures quite correctly.
I'll just let you conduct this interview, and I'll be quiet.
So the raccoons are literally dropping poop.
Oh my God! Do they think it's
drinks?
Like chocolate chips in their drinks?
Now was this in Kansas City?
It was outside. Right? And as they're walking across the drop ceiling, all the particles in the ceiling are falling. So there's this dust. And then one of my bartending experts, the raccoon, fell out of the drop ceiling and landed on a bar in front of her. She nearly had a freaking heart attack. It was something to see.
Say that come with my Jack and Coke. Now, are there any bars or businesses that you just refuse to help out?
There was one O-Face that I actually walked out of.
Yeah? And why was that?
And I've done 92 episodes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've never walked out before. And these people punched employees.
Oh.
I mean, they treated nobody with dignity, customers, employees, and I won't perpetuate disrespect. I won't perpetuate practices that you know, are unethical to me.
Yeah.
So I pretty much looked at him, said, F you. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to rescue your barn. I walked out.
And I'm sure they're closed down now.
They just closed last week. They hung in there for about 3 months, Lance, and then they went down.
Why do you think people get into this business in the first place? Do you think that they think it's just an easy thing? It's like, oh, I've always dreamt of having a bar. And and then they just are like, oh, my gosh, this is really hard work.
Well, I think, you know, almost all of us have thought about owning a bar.
Yeah, of course.
Point, right?
Yeah,
I bet you have.
Definitely. Yeah, that's the thing everybody says. Yeah. Oh, I just want to own a bar someday.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's not the reason to do it. It's hard work, man. You know from your music career, it's hard work.
Yeah. If you want to do it right.
If you want to do it right, it's hard, and so's the bar business. So, you know, you don't want to get into the bar business because you like drinking. I mean, that's like loving drugs and becoming a pharmacist. I mean, that's insanity. Mm-hmm. It's a hard business, and people think it's inherently profitable. Oh, a drink is $8, only costs you a buck. Oh, what about the rent, the electricity, the insurance? The fact is, it isn't inherently profitable. So you can lose your shirt if you're not good at it.
I'm here with John Taffer, host of Bar Rescue on Spike Television. Sunday, 9, 8 Central is the new season starting. Have you ever gotten in a confrontation, like a fist fight with any of these bar owners?
Three times on the show. I've been
Did you win?
Not a punch, more of a push.
Okay.
Do you think I won?
Of course. I mean, you're a tall guy there, yes. I would not mess with you, trust me. Yeah,
I don't back down. I can't. You know, they're in trouble, and they're counting on me. You know, when you hear them say it on the show, they're in debt hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're living in their parents' basement. It's bad. And I got to be aggressive to save them sometimes, the classic tough love. But I take it seriously. Yeah. You know, I can't leave and not leave them in a better place, Lance.
Of course.
Because, you know, when I watch the show, I mean, how often does, like, security, you know, what goes on? I'm curious, like, John, off camera, like, is there, like, some confrontations that where it just really gets physical or security has to get involved and it's just, you know, to that point?
No, I'll tell you a little secret. When the camera stops, I walk off. Mm. I have no interactions with anybody that isn't on camera. Because the last thing in the world I want is you to come up and say something that's meaningful and have it not be on camera.
Yeah.
Right? So it's serious business to me. When I'm finished, I walk out, I leave. And when it's time to go back to work, I come in again. Mm-hmm. So I keep it straight business.
Now, John, you probably are the most censored guy on television.
So I'm told.
I just want to let you know, we're on SiriusXM, so feel free to not be censored on the show.
So I shouldn't fucking worry about it.
Exactly. Let it out. Let it out. You know, this is your one time. You can just really let it out. So just have fun on the show.
Fuck. There we go. I feel better now. Thank you, Lance.
After I told you my mother was listening to
No.
My gosh. How dare you? Now, anyone listening right now that wants to start a bar, what are the top three mistakes bar and restaurant owners make?
One, don't do it for social reasons. Okay. It's a tough business, right? You don't want all your friends there. You want people there that are spending money. Mm-hmm. Two, have extra money. Because I believe bars are sort of like football games. You don't go out of business, you just run out of time.
Yeah.
You don't lose the game, you just run out of time. Mm-hmm. If you had enough money for another month, you might have turned the corner.
Yeah.
So what happens is they run out of money before they figure it out, which is awful. So have some extra money. And three, don't build it for yourself. Build it for your customers.
Yeah.
That's the
trick.
That's
good advice right there. Do you have any ownership or equity in any of the bars that you rescue?
No, I can't. There's no conflict there. I've owned up to 17 at one time in my life.
Wow.
But no, I have no involvement in any of
them. And what was your first one?
My first one was called Lynn Dickey Sports Cafe in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah?
What part? I went to school in St. Louis. What part of town is that?
It was in St. Louis Union Station downtown.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's great.
Yep. Yeah. And Lynn Dickey was a quarterback for Green Bay.
Love Green Bay. That's my team. Now, here in West Hollywood, the Troubadour, of course, you were the first bar manager. You had your first bar management job, the Troubadour, in 1978.
Ooh, good research.
Yeah, this is my man right here. Why do you think you've had such a successful career in the bar and restaurant business, starting from 1978?
You know, I think it's that I really care, and I understand I'm not in the bar business. I don't sell liquor. I don't sell food. I create reactions.
Okay.
You didn't create music. You created reactions. You achieve it through the music, don't you?
Yeah, it's true.
I look at nightclubs that way. Mm-hmm. I create reactions through food. I create reactions through beverages. I create reactions through music. I create interaction, which creates the ultimate reaction between people. So I have really focused on human behavior. Mm-hmm. What makes you smile? What makes you dance more? What makes you have that extra cocktail? What makes you look in somebody else's eyes and connect?
And I'd imagine it changes so much over time too. I mean, what people love this year, they're gonna hate next year.
Yes, it's
trendy.
How do
you keep up with the trends?
Well, it's difficult, but you know, sometimes you just ignore the trends. Mm. You know, the oldest restaurant in any city is the steakhouse.
Oh, yeah.
You know, once you start a trend, then you're slave to the next trend.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, sometimes the longest lasting and the best bars are just cool bars that aren't so trendy or glitzy, per se.
I love it. Jeff Cirillo over there, do you have any questions over here? Because I know this is one of your favorite shows. They were so excited you were coming on the show. They're like, can we just stay for the next hour?
I don't know if you... one of the things I'm most fascinated about is the butt funnel.
The butt funnel.
What is the butt funnel?
An amazing invention.
You will love
Tell us about the butt funnel.
It's fantastic.
Okay. You go to nightclubs, right? You're a club guy.
Not as much as I used to, but yes.
Dance music arena. So every nightclub has a dance floor, of course, and there's drink rails typically around the dance floor to demise it.
Right.
So you know where to dance and where not to. There's openings to enter the dance floor. Mm-hmm. I keep those openings at 28 to 30 inches wide.
Okay.
So when you go through that opening, you're going to rub butts with somebody else.
Yeah.
So now you're approaching the butt funnel. Somebody else is approaching from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You evaluate that individual and you make a choice. Do I go through the butt funnel front to front? Or do I spin because I don't like what I'm looking at back to front? But the whole point of it, Lance, is I'm getting you to look in somebody else's eyes.
Yeah.
I'm creating a connection or interaction. I'm putting you closer together. That's what the bar business is all about.
Those little details is what it makes a success. That's great.
Totally
do you have any other secrets that you can tell us about?
Well, example, elevated areas in bars, platforms. If there's one staircase in a platform, and let's say there's somebody up there you're interested in, so you walk up the stairs, you're strutting by, you hit a dead end. You feel like an idiot. You got to turn around and walk back the other way. If there's a second staircase, you walk through with a purpose. Nobody knows you're checking them out. Nobody knows what you're doing. So staircases and flow, bar stool heights. You know, when we create bars, and I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, but when we have a female demographic over 34 years old, we put backs on bar stools. When they're under 34, we don't, because they tend to get a little more sensitive about their butts past 34.
And speaking of bar stools, I never understood this, and maybe there's some science behind this, but when you're at one of those bars that's just so busy, you know, and it takes you forever to get to the bartender, even to, you know, see you, why would they still have the bar stools there with people sitting on it having their drinks when you are still, like, there's hundreds of people behind them trying to get drinks? Is there a science to that? Is there a reason why they still allow people to sit at the bar when it's that busy?
Well, you know, when we're really busy, sometimes we pull the bar stools, you know, and just create a whole walk-up bar environment. But the fact of the matter is you get around those bar stools and get that drink anyway, don't you?
Yeah, well, yeah, we definitely do. Yeah.
And a lot of times it's who's sitting at those bar stools, which we call seating the room.
Oh, do you ever plant those on purpose?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, what makes a bar cool are the people in it. So I can take an old dive bar, seed it, get people like you in there, right? People that have the right look, right appearance, and suddenly it's hip.
Would you ever have to pay people to come at the beginning of any restaurant or bar?
When we seed a room, sure, we'll pay it to put the right people in there to create the right imaging, just like seat fillers in an award show.
Of course, or just like Donald Trump just did for his campaign.
He paid him a lot.
Now, John, this might sound like a ridiculous question, but I have said this my whole life. When I go to bars or clubs or wherever, I always say, there's never enough bathrooms and there's a big line. I mean, is that a purpose? Do bars do that on purpose?
No, of course not. Because when you're waiting online in the bathroom, you're not spending any money.
And that's what I always say.
That's where a lot of bar operators screw up. And codes, construction codes, don't make bathrooms large enough. So you got to, you know, have the insight to do that. Here's an interesting fact. Guys spend about 3.5 minutes in a bathroom. Women spend about 8.
Line is always out the door.
Exactly. So there's a size difference between the two. But here's where you blow it. If you put in 5 stalls and 2 sinks, you got to back up at the sink. If you put in 5 stalls and 5 sinks and 2 towel dispensers, you got to back up at a towel dispenser. You have to design a bathroom properly so it flows and gets people in and out. It's not a silly question at all. It actually costs money and it infuriates people.
Yeah. We're here with John Taffer. Did you grow up in the food industry, bar industry?
I did. And you know, I've been in the bar business. I actually went to college for political science. I'm glad I didn't go into that business.
Right.
And started attending bar in college, and one thing led to another, and I've been doing it ever since.
What bar was that?
And what in college? Denver. It's called PT's in Denver, Colorado. I don't even think it's there anymore.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you should have rescued that one.
Maybe I should have.
The original. Come on. And then what was
it's
your first
fucked up bar too? It needed rescuing. Now that I think about it.
Oh well, maybe you can bring it back one day. What was your first job working at a bar? Was it the Troubadour? A bartender.
It was just being a bartender in a bar in Denver. I didn't know how to make one drink, and I lied and said I knew what I was doing.
Oh yeah.
And the first guy who walks up for the first drink ordered. Singapore Sling or some...
Yeah, Singapore and Slinger.
And I had no idea what it was. There was no internet then. There were no recipe books then. So I was busted in seconds. I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. Somehow I pulled it out.
Yeah. I remember in New York, the first place that I ever bartended for fun, it was a place called Mugshots on First Avenue. And it was so much fun. And they were teaching me how to bartend. And it was like, whatever. The first order I got was a beer. And of course, being so nervous, my first time behind a bar, I, take the glass, I fill it with ice, like you're supposed to do.
Oh.
Fill it with beer. And they're like, yeah, I kind of ordered the beer without ice. I'm like, damn it, my first order had to be a beer. Yeah.
And I bet you were good, because a bartender's about moving and grace. It's sort of dancing a little bit.
I was okay. Yeah. I was okay. The only problem was I can't take multiple orders. I don't understand how
you can never be a bartender.
Oh my gosh.
That kills that.
All right, guys, I can do maybe two at a time. Two at a time, maybe. But when people are just spitting out 5 orders or 10 orders, I just can't remember them. There's just no way. So I could not be a bartender.
So how long did you do it?
I mean, just for fun, we started going there maybe like 3 months before it closed. See, they needed your rescue too.
But it was a blast, wasn't it?
It was a blast, yes. So much fun. You also have a new app called John Taffer's Bar HQ. What is this? Tell me about this.
Bar HQ is a B2B app I created for the bar business free. Mm-hmm. And what I did is, I love my industry. So you download this app for free. It gives you like 60, 70 promotions for free. Every kind of promotion you can imagine. It does all your social media management. Does all your scheduling through smartphones, etc. And it's free. It helps them run their bar.
Oh, that's great.
And it's one of the most popular business download apps now in the country. And I'm really, really proud of it. Anybody who owns a bar should download it.
Oh, that's great.
It's free. It'll help, really help them run their business.
Yeah, people own bar restaurants. John Taffer's Bar HQ. Is technology and updated software important for bars in 2015?
It is, but it's scary too, Lance. I have to understand what technology to embrace and what technology to fear. I never want you ordering on a tablet.
Oh, yeah. See, I was going to ask you that, because that's kind of the new trend of just
doing it
yourself.
But I hate it.
Yeah.
I believe we should look in each other's eyes.
Yeah. So you like
it's a relationship.
Like that connection.
You bet. Mm-hmm. And I can drink at home. I can make food at home. I can watch anything on a satellite. I can listen to you at home. I don't need a bar. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I get in a bar is social interaction.
Yeah.
So when we start to take away that element and put technology between us, it scares the hell out of me. Yeah.
And real quick, that's a great point. I worked in college. I'm from Cincinnati. When I went home, I remember it was like revolutionary, and they introduced that to the waiters. And I remember it destroyed it.
Yeah.
Because the girls had their little tablets, and it was a bunch of cute girls working at the restaurant. I'm like, you're taking away the interaction with the people ordering. It completely defeats the purpose.
And it's a big trend now, and they're doing, all the digital menus. You can look at the items and read the ingredients and the calories and all that. And, there's a side to it that's sort of neat, but they're taking what should be an intimate relationship experience and they're making it like a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
And I think it's a mistake.
True. Now, this is very interesting. So the NFL Sunday Ticket has become vital for every diehard fan. And you are, people say you invented this concept.
Well, I created it, not invented it. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a story real quick.
Okay, yeah, tell us.
There was a company in Baltimore, Maryland called ComSat, and they managed all the satellites in the sky, and they used to do the pay-per-view channels in hotels and such. Mm-hmm. They came up with the idea to buy out-of-market sports programming. So the concept was, if you're in New York, you could buy the Dallas Cowboys signal on your cable system. You'd get the coach's show and the Dallas game, and you'd pay for it. So they hired my company to do a feasibility study for it, because I won Operator of the Year in the sports bar business that year. So I did a feasibility study determining what people would pay for it, was it viable, etc. Sold it to them, got paid handsomely. They said, this is pretty cool. Tell us what it would look like. What do bar operators need? So I did another report, got paid handsomely. What would it look like? What promotional materials, programming grids, all of that. Then they asked me for a third document. Who would you sell it to? Fridays, all those kind of people in the world. So they took my work, brought it to the NFL to get the license. Mm-hmm. NFL read it. We should do this ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
They put me on the advisory board of NFL Enterprises, and we rolled out Sunday Ticket, and it was the product that we created that was, in fact, rolled out.
Wow.
And I'm a diehard NFL guy, since I was little. I mean, I would argue that is one of the most revolutionary things that's happened in the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah,
hands
it was. And the other leagues have followed a similar programming format and grid. But it was interesting? While I was doing it, technology changed. And now we could run multiple channels on one transponder. So originally it started out that you'd get one game, you'd have one big analog dish,
right.
And you'd get your one game. When compression came, which was right in the middle of us inventing it, now you could get several games on one transponder. So that's when Sunday Ticket became eight games at once.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody then had eight analog dishes outside and all the TVs. And
and I think that's how fantasy football was born, too, because of...
It's a good point.
Yeah. Yes, because you could interact with the games, and it changed everything. So you could see the Green Bay game in L.A. and know that they had it every week at your bar that you went to.
Do you think they'll ever open up that deal to, you know how, like, you know, Time Warner, you can't see the Sunday Ticket. Do you think that'll always be, you know, with a DirecTV?
You know, now there's more platforms for everything, you know, as there's more distribution, even in music and such, there's more distribution platforms all the time. You know, DirecTV bought the rights to it initially on an exclusive basis. It's now available on the internet, and I think you're going to see it open up and start to become more available through other suppliers.
Yeah. We're here with John Taffer from Bar Rescue on Spike TV. I would like to know, what city's doing it right with bars and restaurants? What's your favorite city to go to in this country?
Well, I happen to live there, so I'm a little biased, but I think you're Vegas.
In Vegas, okay.
I mean, the nightclubs in Vegas are fucking believable.
They are. They're doing it right. They really are.
I mean, XS does $110 million in a year, Lance.
Really?
Hakkasan, $104 million. Ooh. Marquee, $85 million. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the chefs that are in Vegas now, the restaurants that
are the best of the best.
It is the best of the best. Yeah. I think it's the nightlife capital of the world now, myself.
It is. It's gotten so amazing. And, you know, it had that lull for a while there. You know, I think, you know, early 2000s, late 90s was awesome. And then it just kind of went away a little bit. But now I think it's just all-time high.
And what's cool is years ago, the billboards were all shows and casinos. Mm-hmm. Now the billboards are all DJs, nightlife-based. Exactly. I mean, Vegas is all about nightlife now. It's an exciting time in Vegas.
It is. It is. How long have you lived in Vegas?
Only about 3 years. Moved from Florida.
Okay. Nice. Now, when we're in New York, where do we need to go? What is the great bars, and then what is the great restaurant we need to go to? Because it's ever-changing in the city.
It is ever-changing. I'm a Del Posto guy.
Yeah?
Okay. Great restaurant downtown. Yeah. You know, the great thing about New York is I'm not going to pick one bar, because there's a great bar almost on every corner of New York. Mm-hmm. What's great about New York are the neighborhood bars.
It's true. See, that's why I like Brother Jimmy's is one of my favorite places, because there's a Brother Jimmy's in every neighborhood. And it's great because, you know exactly what you're going to get. I like the food. I know I can watch my sports, and it's always just my neighborhood place.
It's just cool, comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's not imposing. You can go there anytime you want. You can be yourself when you're there. And I think that's a perfect bar.
What are your feelings on just hole-in-the-wall bars?
I think they're great.
You see these. What about the ones that just only take cash? Because you see some of these. is that a bar that they're just not going to make any money?
Well, no, they're not taking. They're only taking cash because they don't want to pay taxes.
It's a tax thing, right? Yeah.
I mean, that's the reason why they're doing something like that. I've seen that happen in many occasions. I've seen bars take an extra cash register, put it on one side of the bar, and the taxes don't. You know, the IRS doesn't know that other cash register exists.
And you can get away with that these days.
Well, you know, you get busted because what happens is I can look at your purchases and know what your sales should have been.
Right. Yeah.
So the only way
to
do
it with anything anymore.
You can't. The only way to do it is to buy liquor from different liquor stores, not have receipts for it, and not buy it from wholesale suppliers. But that's against the law. A bar can't buy liquor from a liquor store. It's got to buy it through a wholesaler.
Oh, okay.
So to do it, you're going to violate the tax code. You're going to violate the purchasing codes. I mean, it becomes criminal. People do it. Okay. So whenever you see cash only, be suspect. You might just be purchasing booze from a crook.
Which makes sense, because there's this place in West LA called Lost and Found, and it's in like a shopping center. And it looks sketchy, but it's great, and it's really cheap.
Great dive bar.
And of course, they overpour in the drinks. But now I realize they're probably selling drugs out back.
Well, so if in fact they're willing to operate in that way, then let me suggest to you that maybe there's 20% water in those bottles, so the 20% overpour you're getting is all bullshit.
I didn't
even
think about that. Yeah.
So, I mean, if they're being dishonest, then how far is the dishonesty going? So I would worry about that.
Yeah. Now, you're also on another Spike TV show called Hungry Investors.
Yes.
What's this show about?
Hungry Investors is a restaurant-based show where John Besh, Tiffany Derry, and I go out, two chefs, and we look at restaurants to invest in. And we run them through the mill, and if they're worthy, then we invest in one of them. In some cases we don't. Right now I'm so focused on Bar Rescue, I just signed for 20 more and for 5 back to the bars.
All right.
Which is where we revisit the bars did, which is really
fun. I love those. I love when you get to go back and see.
Me too.
You know, even with like Shark Tank and shows like that, you know, you just want to see what happened.
Yeah.
Like, what happens after this?
I'm with you. So it's a lot of fun for me to go back and look too. Mm-hmm. So that's 25 episodes. That'll keep me busy 30 weeks next year.
Wow.
Good Lord. Are you, do you have your own liquors or wines or anything
Not
like
yet.
That?
We're working on something right now.
Okay, good. Because I'm like, you got to have something out there. Because, and do you think that the liquor industry has gotten better at, with their, because like, I like Tito's, you know, Tito's
yeah,
is
Tito's
vodka,
handmade vodka.
And it's great because, you know, it's better for you. And do you think that people are doing it right now of trying to make it healthier for people?
It's almost like craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's craft spirits now like Tito's, handmade, mm-hmm. you know, but even products like Dickel, which is, you know, a pretty classic bourbon. Only 25 people work in the Dickel factory. Mm-hmm. You know, they touch every bottle, every product themselves. It's a neat industry. It's still handcrafted in very many ways.
Will this industry ever get to a place where you actually order drinks with things that, like vitamins that are in your drinks and, you know.
They've tried.
It just doesn't work.
They've tried. We tried to infuse, the situation years ago created a vodka called Devotion that had some health elements to it. Mm-hmm. I'm just not sure people want to be healthy while they're drunk.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bit of a conflict there. That's a moment of unhealthiness that I think you should enjoy.
Yeah. Did they drink? did they have the drink and they instantly start fist bumping?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, John, I have to ask you, San Diego declared a John Hafer Day on May 5th?
Yeah, May 5th, which was Cinco de Mayo, the mayor declared it John Taffer Day in San
Diego. I totally mispronounced her last
name. Gave me a proclamation, you know, to put on my wall, and so May 5th is John Taffer Day in San Diego. Let's go party on May 5th,
well,
Lance.
May 4th is my birthday, so
well, then
it'd be
we're
a
there.
Perfect double celebration. So we have our proclamation up there. Our Dirty Pop Day is, I can't see it because it's behind Grumpy Cat over there, but it's in August or September, I forget. But we do have a day, too.
September 15th.
Yay. So we're official.
We have two celebrations to do throughout the
So the politicians year. Did two things right.
Yeah, exactly.
Your proclamation
and
mine. My
proclamation and your proclamation.
The rest of the stuff, they pretty much blew.
All right, John. It has been great getting to know you. You're an amazing guy. We love your show. Everyone, the Sunday, the new season of John's show, Bar Rescue, 9/8 Central on Spike Television. And follow John on Twitter. It's at John Taffer. As easy as that. I love when people have their own name. And on Facebook, it's at Official John Taffer. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Great to be here. Great to meet you.
You too, my man.
Look forward to doing
anytime.
It again.
Oh,
look forward to it.
You better believe you'll be back. And May 5th. We're celebrating.
All
right, guys. We'll be right back with more Dirty Pop.